Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. It is Thursday afternoon.
Now, Brian, not to cut you off. I have not. But I have to kick it to our producer, Jackson, for a second. We have a bit of a surprise for my fellow co-hosts. So
I don't like surprises.
Take it away, Jackson. Oh, you're going to like this surprise. It's good.
We actually have a brand new introduction for each of you.
Ooh.
Courtesy of a New York Knicks legend.
Ah.
And now it's time to meet today's Hoop Collective. First, from St. Vincent St. Mary's High in Akron and Kent State, please welcome the one, the only, Brian Windhorst.
So now you can be officially welcomed, but don't worry. We're not done yet.
Next, he attended some boarding school in Maine and then spent many years at North Texas. Ben McMahon!
Howdy, partners.
And last, but certainly not least,
from Randolph Central School and St. Bonaventure University, Tim Bontemps!
Now you can grace the embrace of the garden crab.
Oh, man, that was a surprise.
So man. Mike Walczewski, as I've said before, legendary Knicks PA announcer, legendarily good dude, is a fan of the pod. And Jackson had the idea of having him do intros for us. So I asked him a couple weeks ago, and he immediately said he'd be very happy to do that. And in typical New York style, he took some liberties and had some fun, particularly with McMahon's. We have a couple other things during the show that he did for us, too, that we'll have later on. But Mike is the best. So
thank you very much, Mike. It was truly a surprise for me. I noticed, McMahon, that Bontemps might have had a say here because he arranged for himself to be introduced last like he was Michael Jordan.
No, yeah. I didn't do that.
I question that. Also, I think we have a new The Hoop Collective record for the fastest Bontemps interruption.
When Jackson and I
were talking about how we're going to set this up, Jackson's like, I'll say something. I said, no, I'll say something. So then these guys will get annoyed at me for interrupting before they get the surprise. So
Bontemps just interrupted my little discussion about his interruption.
So there you go.
This one was a worthy interruption. I'll give you that, Bontemps.
He just didn't want me to have the record for the earliest interruption. That's what it was.
Right. Yeah. Well, Bontemps doesn't even believe in pardoning his interruption. He just interrupts. He doesn't even worry about
true.
That.
It's true.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mike. I don't know. I'm hoping to go to the Garden this weekend. I'll go to the Garden this weekend if Kent State wins tomorrow night in Albany. I guess tonight, Friday night in Albany. I'm going to McMahon. I'm going to New York tomorrow, and Bontemps is going to drive
today
me
for
up.
The pod.
Right, Friday. Bontemps is going to drive me up to Albany, and we're going to watch Drake play University of Miami, where I'm going to root for Drake. Okay,
love him.
If Kent wins, I'm packing for 3 days, but I have a flight home on Saturday. So I'm being responsible. But if the Flashes upset the Hoosiers, which I was there in 2001 in San Diego when, as a 13 seed, Kent State upset number 4 seed in Indiana. I've seen it before. I'm going to go on Saturday for the Nuggets at the Garden playing at the Knicks on Saturday afternoon. And I obviously want to go to that game because it would have meant that Kent State would have won. And my guy, Rob Senderoff, Kent State's head coach, would have celebrated his first NCAA tournament victory.
Oh, I thought you wanted to go to the game because you never get to watch the Nuggets play.
That's true. I don't even know what Nikola Jokic looks like. It'll be great to see him for the first time. But I also kind of want to check in on the Nuggets, who are – now they are playing at Detroit on Thursday night. So I don't know if their losing streak will be over. They are in the midst of a 5-game road trip, which has not started out well. They lost in Toronto earlier this week where the Raptors put up 125 on them. And I felt like they could have maybe put up 140. The thing about the Nuggets, their defense was kind of middle of the pack. I think when I wrote about them about a week ago or so about their superior clutch play, I looked up all their defensive numbers and they ranked 12th at the time. That's not great, but it's pretty good. And also when you get into defensive rankings, you know, the difference between the team in eighth place and the team in 15th is usually negligible. It's sort of like, are you at the top, in the middle, or at the bottom, basically. And the Nuggets are in the middle. Historically, that doesn't necessarily bode well for a long playoff run. Typically the teams that make the finals are the best defensive teams. Last year, for example, the Warriors and Celtics were the top two of the top defensive teams in the league. But their defense has fallen off a cliff. And look, they had a cushion. I think they were up at one point on the Grizzlies by 7 games in the loss column. So it's not the end of the world. Teams lose on the road. But Bontemps, 4-game losing streak heading into this game in Detroit, which I would hope they would win, but I don't know. Their defense has totally fallen off the cliff. They've given up over 120 points, 3 consecutive games. And I think more interestingly, with Joel Embiid dominating nightly, had another great performance on Wednesday night in Cleveland and a win there. Jokic's MVP status may have been shaky, and the Nuggets status is contender is being questioned a little bit right now.
Yeah, I mean, we have a story leading our website right now that in Vegas, the odds have basically flipped, and Embiid is now an even money favorite to be MVP of the league. You know, we'll see what happens in the next straw poll in a couple of weeks. We'll also see what happens when Denver hosts Milwaukee on Saturday the 25th and then Philly on Monday the 27th, 2 games I'll be at. We'll see how those games go. Joel will be the first to tell you that he thinks he didn't win MVP last season because Philly lost to Denver and Milwaukee late in the regular season, in either back-to-back games or games
I don't think
shortly
that's
after
true.
Each other. I'm not saying it's true. I'm not saying it's necessarily true either, but that's his belief personally. And, you know, he's going to get a chance in a marquee national TV game, not up against the NCAA tournament, to go head-to-head with Jokic. And if he has a game like he did in January and they win on the road in Denver, you know, he's going to give himself a real shot to win the MVP award he's waited a couple of years to win. And to your point about the Nuggets, you know, this stretch, yes, they have a cushion. They were way ahead. They're now, I think, 3 games ahead of Memphis, 3 or 4 games ahead of Memphis in the loss column in the Western Conference. But if you look at the issues they've had in particular on the defensive end of the court, we've talked about it a bunch on the pod throughout the year. That's really the place where you look at this team and you wonder, when they get in a playoff series and people are attacking Nikola Jokic over and over and over again, how are they going to hold up? And the fact that they're giving up 49 points in the first quarter to a Toronto Raptors team that can't score on anyone and is struggling to score all the time, that just tells you that they're not in a very good place right now. And it just reinforces what we've talked about before in the pod, which is that in these playoffs in the West, with how bad the West is this year, there are no excuses for Denver. And if they can't get through the West this year, you have to question if this team's ever going to be able to do it. And you have to question what a team with Nikola Jokic's ceiling is as a real championship contending team.
Yeah. I don't want to overreact to a bad stretch in March for a team that's basically locked up the number one seed, but it's not like they don't have anything to play for. Like, if you get to the finals, you don't want to be able to have home court advantage in that series. Like, that's out there. You know, Michael Malone, obviously exasperated, talking about, I'm going to find some guys that are ready to fight with me because right now we're just in chill mode. You know, we'll see how they respond to that. But I definitely think that the commanding lead that Nikola Jokic had in this MVP race has disappeared. And look, like, this guy's had like 37 point triple doubles in games that they've lost during this streak, which is fine. But I do go back to, like, he has to convincingly win the MVP to get a third straight MVP, given the historical context of that, you know, the lack of playoff success, this thing that Bucks fans keep bitching about that I said a few years ago, it still applies. But for, you know, 2/3 of the season. I just couldn't come up with any justification to, and I don't even have a damn vote, first of all, so shut up. But I couldn't.
You might get one this year. This might be the year.
No, I had one year, and apparently they thought my ballot sucked because they didn't give me one since then. anyways, he has to win in convincing fashion. And like when Mike Malone earlier this year said, if your only reason not to give him the MVP is because you don't want to give him a third straight, you need to find another reason. Well, we're finding other reasons. And it's not just the Nuggets fading. It's the fact that Embiid has been unbelievable. You know, Giannis and the Bucks have been, you know, the best team in the league throughout the course of the season. Giannis is putting up bonkers numbers. But I do think, like, look, the tie goes to the guy who has been right there in the race the last couple of years and doesn't have one. And you know, Embiid, I do think the fact that he dominated and in the head-to-head matchup, you know, Jackson just posted the numbers in the chat here, 47-18-5. Jokic had 24-9. Yeah, I mean, just a dominant performance. If he has another dominant performance and they're able to beat the Nuggets, I think that you have to consider him the clear front runner at that point. And honestly, it might get to a point where you're like, is it Embiid or Giannis, and Jokic could be third, which the analytics argument's always going to be for Jokic. But if it was just as simple as that, then we wouldn't need MVP voters because you could just punch numbers into a computer and spit out the winner every year.
Yeah, to your point, McMahon, what have we talked about since the start of the season, right? People are going to be looking for a reason not to give Nikola Jokic a third MVP award. And which, like you said, fair. Well, but it's also just the reality of the situation. When there's a reason people haven't won three in a row, when Jordan won two in a row, LeBron won two in a row, Steph won two in a row, Giannis won two in a row. All these guys didn't win a third in a row for some reason, right? Mm-hmm. People at some point were looking for reasons to vote for other people. Well, again, whether it's fair or not is irrelevant. That's just the nature of how this goes. So, as McMahon correctly said, he was going to have to win in convincing fashion. What the last couple of weeks have done is removed the convincing fashion, and they've turned it into a toss-up, and he's not going to win a toss-up. So he's going to have to win, in my opinion, a convincing race at the end. Now, if they play Milwaukee and Philly, and he has triple-doubles, and they win both games, and he plays great, that could be enough to push it over the line. But I, you know, from where this was a month ago, the reaction I had when Jokic had such a big lead in the second straw poll was that it was going to snap back because people, I got the only comment I heard about that poll was, I can't believe Jokic had that many first place votes. People thought he'd be in first. People didn't think he'd be that far ahead. And so I thought there was going to be some snapping back. And then would you put it, combine it with the way Denver has played after the All-Star break, which is terrible. You combine it with the fact that since this January 1st, the Bucks are 22-2 when Giannis plays. When you combine it with the fact that Embiid is leading the league in scoring for the second year in a row, shooting like 57% from the field and dominating on a nightly basis, like, yeah, this thing has come right down to it. And it's, to me, a wide open three-horse race with, what, 25 days left in the season? A little less.
Well, let me ask you this.
I was going to say, our guy Spears has De'Aaron Fox.
Well, De'Aaron Fox has got another award locked up and sewn up beyond recognition. So
Spears has, they just installed a beam at his house.
Spears, when he submits his ballot, he's going to submit it on purple colored paper. Just in a purple
Spears
envelope.
Spears gets to do every victory lap he wants after making that prediction. He was on a limb by himself, and he was right.
He's got Fox, Sabonis, Barnes.
He's got Keegan Murray, Rookie of the Year.
They're going to get Mike Brown as Coach of the Year and De'Aaron Fox for the new Clutch Player of the Year. So they'll get a couple awards for sure.
And we'll get back on track real quick, but Fox All-NBA absolutely has a case, as does Sabonis. Okay, back to our regularly scheduled program.
The game winner that Fox hit on Wednesday night was very impressive.
It was effing nice, as he said.
That was a great line. That was a great line by him.
Yeah. Anyway, two things I want to say about this MVP. Before this four-game losing streak, which, again, might be over by the time this pod comes out, the Nuggets had won 8 out of 9. They've hit a bump when Giannis and Embiid also are playing their best basketball. Secondly, I voted for Giannis in the second straw poll. And while you guys know how I feel about Embiid, I voted for him last year. I wanted to vote for him 2 years ago.
We also know how you feel about Joker, but go on.
I'm not taking that.
I'm just saying, go. Keep talking.
When you vote for a guy for MVP, how can you feel? You have to feel great about it.
Self-loathing.
You guys know how I feel about Embiid. Why should I change my vote at this point? I had Giannis for a reason, and he's only getting stronger in my eyes. So, you know, I'm recognizing what Joel's doing. I'm watching it. Mm-hmm. I watched almost the entire Cavs Sixers game, and Evan Mobley, he had to start because Jared Allen is out with an eye injury for the Cavs. And Evan Mobley worked really, really hard in that game, and he couldn't contain the Bull.
He had no prayer of doing it.
No, the prayer was that they would not reverse his sixth foul with 4 minutes and change left, which I saw JB Bickerstaff was not real pleased with that review. That was the only prayer, like get him beat off the floor. Too big, too strong.
That's exactly right. Skilled. That was your only prayer, was to get him disqualified. It was a controversial call if you saw it.
It was a charge. He put his shoulder in the guy's chest.
I thought it was a flop. That
it was both.
Look, I was fine with an overturn. I would have been fine with it staying. I thought it was a borderline call. Didn't really put his arm out very much at all. Evan Mobley was certainly very ready to go flying into the stanchion to get the sixth foul.
I will say this. If Embiid puts his shoulder in your chest, you're going to go flying in the stanchion too, whether you're flopping or not.
I'd go out of the building if he did it to me.
And Mobley, hell of a player, not exactly a brick wall physique there.
No. But it's the same reason why Jared Allen has always gotten killed whenever he's played against Embiid. Jared Allen's a great player. He does not have the size to contain Joel Embiid and gets run over just about every time they play.
Well, everybody gets killed by Embiid.
The people who do have the size don't have the mobility, right?
The guy's leading the league in scoring.
Exactly.
Right. I'm just saying, Jared Allen in particular has been on the short end of that matchup a bunch, because they've been in the same division for a while and had to play many, many times.
Yeah, that's true. The scoring race is, I'm not saying it's over, but it's a half point lead. We'll see. I don't know when Luke is coming back. I think Embiid's at this point, it's a half point lead with however many games it is to go, whatever, 15, 17, whatever it is. That's a pretty comfortable lead.
McMahon, yeah, by the way, if Brian votes for Giannis, he's going to have less games played, most likely, than Embiid.
We know Wendy. That? Hey, we know Wendy. He loves some load managing, baby. Loves it.
Yeah, well, it's not load managing. It's, you know, oh my God, the guy sprained his ankle, so everything he did for the last 4 months is ruled invalid. By the way, you were McMahon. You're in San Antonio. The Mavericks were there last night. No Kyrie, no Luka again. Although they handled the mighty Spurs.
Listen, you probably didn't watch the last couple minutes or the last minute of regulation.
I didn't watch a minute.
Okay, so, thank God for you, because my eyeballs are aching.
It was truly awful.
Dude, this was the worst G League game I've ever watched in my entire life. It was just a total debacle.
Excuse me, sir. St. Vincent St. Mary's own Malachi Branham had 20 points in that game.
I didn't realize that he was one of yours. Okay, my bad.
Oh, yes. I mean, we send guys to the NBA. What do you want?
Well, usually your NBA players, you're pumping up when they're freshmen in high school. So I didn't, I hadn't heard a lot about him from you.
St. Vincent St. Mary's current star is headed to Kent State next year.
Okay, you've slipped over the last 25 years.
Anyway, I don't know if there was an update on when Luka and Kyrie might actually play.
So they're practicing today in L.A. We'll see. But Kyrie, we talked to him after shoot-around. He basically said, this is going to take longer than I thought.
No. He had a great quote this week when he was talking about his sore foot. He said, how did he exactly say it?
Hold on. Let me. I don't want to misquote. I don't want to misquote. So let me.
Yeah. Okay. Von Temps, you know that he's on Kyrie's good side. So he wants certainly to make sure everything.
Got to make sure it's all buttoned up.
Listen, I'm just an accurate reporter. That's all. You know me. I've never been one to.
Bob McMahon's looking this up. Just an absolutely abysmal loss for the Lakers. In
oh
Houston Wednesday, setting up this game. No Anthony
speaking
Davis.
Of, yeah, speaking of load Rockets. Management. Okay, here's the quote that I think that, I don't know, there's a couple ones. The one I think that you're referring to is when he said, I just want to take precautionary, and he meant measures. I just want to take precautionary measures at this point in the season. I make my whole entire living with my feet, so I'd rather take care of it now than when I'm 40 years old. Or you might be referring to, we'd love to be out there. Including myself.
No, I was like, he was like, you know, it's important. You know, I make my living with my feet.
Yes.
You know, like, yeah, every NBA player makes their living with their feet. It's yeah. important.
Feet are pretty important for everybody.
So yeah. They're hoping, and by the time this comes out, there'll be more news. They're hoping those guys are both able to practice today in LA. I was told by you know, one person that they weren't real optimistic about having them Friday against the Lakers, which is a big, big game, but we shall see. Luka apparently did a two-a-day on Tuesday and was pretty sore the next day. So with that thigh. So we'll see how things develop. But I mean, dude, they had to
Luka, his living, his thighs are his living.
Yes, 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 very much so. I did have an exclusive with Luke after shoot around. I said, hey, Luke, how you doing? He said, good. And you? I said, good. How's the thigh? He said, good. So,
and you?
he didn't care about my thigh. You can only get that kind of reporting right here on the Hoop Collective.
He cared about your thigh as much as John Wall cared about your back when he ran you over.
Yes.
Yeah, the Lakers on Wednesday night, Anthony Davis was out. He was declared out before the game. Look, I don't know whose decision it was. I you know, that's one thing that happens when players are ruled out for load management. Sometimes it's the team saying, we're taking it out of your hands. And I think, you know, not to put words in Darvin Ham's mouth, but I think the reality, they're worried about Anthony Davis's foot, and if he goes too hard on the foot and hurts the foot, then this whole thing is off.
Yeah, I mean, Darvin said after the game, they won Tuesday, and he said, you know, I believe he called it an active injury still. Said he's not playing with something that's bothering him, but that they are being precautionary with it, and they don't want to have him play in back-to-backs, which you can understand. You also would like to think that with the vaunted new supporting cast that a certain co-host of ours, McMahon, went on and on about earlier in the week,
and
about how great
it
was.
By the way,
I think they'd be able to go win against the Houston Rockets in a game. But
can I just note something real quick? Wendy ain't the co-host. We are guests. We are regular guests on Wendy's pod.
You're something more than a guest.
Check yourself, Von Temps. You ain't all that.
Fair enough. What are the other person on the pod with us today? How about that?
I said was they have a top six roster in the Western Conference.
Well, they don't, and B, if they did, they would have won the game yesterday, but they don't. So that's right.
It wasn't Austin Reeves' fault. If Austin Reeves was playing for the Kings, Spears would be calling for him to make all NBA. That's how good he's been playing recently.
He is. It's Kevin Herter.
You know, the thing about D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley is that they are high variance players. You know, Beasley couldn't miss on Tuesday, and he couldn't hit anything on Wednesday. And that is who Malik Beasley is.
Yeah.
And that is who D'Angelo Russell is. So if you don't have the stability of having Anthony Davis or LeBron in the lineup and you're relying on those two guys, you're going to have egg on your face. By the way, the Rockets are also playing better.
Oh, I was going to say, can Wendy get some Rockets praise? Well, those ears are perking up down there in Clutch City.
No, they definitely have been playing better. Jabari Smith Jr. has been playing better. He wasn't great on Wednesday. He's been very good recently. Exactly what you'd want to see from a rookie improving down the stretch. They got Şengün back for this game, which was a big factor because
he's a quality player.
And yeah, you know, look, I mean, again, Kevin Porter and Jalen Green are high variance players. And in this particular game, Kevin Porter He had a very, very strange flagrant foul in the final second of the game, which I can't quite explain what happened there. But he had a very, very good game. He went 11 of 16 shooting. But from what I've heard on LeBron is that he is not close. That was what I was told, not close. Does that mean he's out for 6 months? No.
Will he return in the coming weeks?
He will return in the coming weeks.
Like Kat? Thanks for that update, guys. He'll be back at some point someday. Yeah. Cool.
These teams have now, we had the Bulls recently did an update on Javonte Green where they essentially said the same thing. We're like, Javonte Green is still alive. He'll be back at some point. Like these updates are getting tiresome.
What is the update on Lonzo Ball?
Getting tiresome. Are you're worn out by Bontemps?
If you're going to put out an update, like why even bother to put out an update about Karl Towns? It says he's alive and he's going to play someday. Like say he's doing something. Otherwise just,
we're kind of bouncing all over the place, but let me just read the,
that's because our host has lost control.
That's true. I've lost control like a team lost control of their star. This is the official update from the Wolves that came out yesterday. Towns is continuing to progress in his rehabilitation program and has been participating in basketball activities. Okay, that doesn't say anything, but okay. He is expected to return in the coming weeks and further updates will be made available. Further updates to his playing status will be provided when available.
There ain't that many weeks to come in this season.
I know, but so anyway, LeBron is not close to returning from what I am told. I know that everybody said the 3 weeks, but I think it was very clear 3 weeks is when he's going to get an official reevaluation. Right. It didn't mean he was coming back in 3 weeks. I know that LeBron has played through injuries in the past. I'm not 100% sure if this is an injury you can play through. I remember a couple of years ago when he had that nasty high ankle sprain, when Solomon Hill rolled up on him from behind and basically was a wrecking ball to that Lakers season. And he came back for the playoffs and was nowhere near himself. And then basically admitted afterwards that like he shouldn't have been playing and then completely shut down for the whole summer. And just to get that ankle right. I wouldn't rule out that he couldn't limp back in there for the playoffs like he did there, but he wasn't himself. So I don't know what the Lakers can count on, but I do know that, if you know, the difference between one game in and out could be the difference between being 11th and being sixth. I mean, the difference between 11th and 10th, or the difference between being ninth and sixth. That's how tight this is.
Forget ninth and sixth. How about ninth and eighth? And you go from having to win one out of two games to winning two games to get in.
Great point. And so you lose a game to the Rockets. I know it's second night of a back-to-back. AD doesn't play, but that's really rough. And now McMahon is saying that Luka doesn't look great for Luka for the game on Friday, and AD should be back for that. That now becomes a game you've got to have. I don't care if Kyrie does play. You've got to beat the Mavericks at home without Luka. You just got to.
And again, that there's nothing certain on that. I didn't get a real optimistic vibe on him or Kyrie. They're still calling him day to day. So,
okay.
I mean, heck, even if they do come back, those guys haven't played in a while. Like, you know, this is what
they haven't played in a while, and they didn't win a lot when they were both on the floor. Like, let's not act like, hey, all the problems are solved because Luka and Kyrie are back, and they still can't stop anybody. And you know,
it goes back to what Brian's been talking about for a while, right? And that the start of the season, the Lakers put themselves in a hole, and they've been digging out of it ever since. And when you do that, these are the kind of games that they're magnified. If you're Denver and you have a cushion, you can lose some games because it doesn't really matter. But if you're in the middle of this morass at the bottom, every game is magnified, good or bad. And you know, that's the case when you're losing games you should win, like this game in Houston.
Morass is a hell of a word. That's a good word.
I have some words.
So the Lakers are back. They were tied for seventh like 15 minutes ago. Now they're back in, as of now, back in 10th. And you know, they have this loss to Houston, which, you know, I don't want to say it was just all their fault. Houston did do some things positive, and you know, they lost that game.
Wendy says through gritted teeth.
They lost that game to the Knicks last Sunday, which, I mean, the Knicks took it. It was a good win for them, but considering the circumstances, I thought the Lakers they had a chance in that game to
yeah, another game. Knicks didn't have Jalen Brunson. Had been second night of a back to back, had been struggling. Like, that's a game they needed to right. win at home.
So you know, you win both of those. We're talking about basically being in a tie with Golden State for sixth. You win, you just split them. You win one of the two of them, and you're in seventh. And instead they're in 10th. And those types of little things, like, I know that a game in March doesn't count any different than a game in November, but when they have this team mm-hmm. that's better, like, they have to cash it in. All right, Bontemps, you have some trivia for us?
Ooh, yes.
I do.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
And now to present today's trivia question, the whiz of the quiz, Tim Bontemps.
I do have trivia, courtesy of our guy Stats Williams. Over the past, we obviously spent time before talking about the MVP race and where it stands. And in referencing that game between the Nuggets and Sixers in a couple weeks, talked about how Joel Embiid had a huge game back in January, scored 47 points. There's only been two times in the last 50 years since the merger that the top two guys finished an MVP have played against each other, and one of them has scored 50 in a game. Which two guys are they?
Oh my God.
What? That's the most damn confusing question ever.
I mean, it's based. I mean, you're asking us to remember a single individual regular season
game.
Well,
I'll give you the years. The one year is going to be easy. 2017. So we're the top two guys in MVP that year.
You act like I remember MVP.
Well, that 2017 was 5 years. That's right. Harden, okay. Westbrook. So Harden scored 49. Or Westbrook scored 49 and won an MVP. And then the other was 1988.
So Jordan. I guess
Jordan scored 50.
Larry Bird.
Larry Bird was second. There you go.
Oh, wow. Damn. Wendy with a clean sweep, guys. It's all about confidence.
Well, he held my hand all the way through that one. I mean, if I didn't have the years,
McMahon couldn't remember 2017, let alone 1988.
Bro, I don't remember 2 weeks ago. I'm getting old.
So, all right. You talked about the 76ers. I want to talk about the 76ers. Next week, because they have a road trip that is not only going to potentially define where their seed will be, it'll define, I think, a good chance of where Embiid's MVP status will be. And by the way, Embiid has won. We all agree the Eastern Conference is the superior conference. He has won Eastern Conference Player of the Month, back-to-back months, January, February, and he's just won Player of the Week, and he's already off to a good start to win Player of the Week again. So they play in Charlotte. They started this road trip. It's a sort of a stretch on the road. They play one home game. They started in Cleveland. They win in Cleveland convincingly. High quality performance. They play in Charlotte Friday. Shouldn't be too tough there. Then they play in Indy. But the real big one is starting next week at Chicago, at Golden State, at Phoenix, at Denver.
Then they come home to play the Mavs and Luka. Well,
better avoid shotgun willies. I'll tell you that. You gotta be ready to roll when you see the Joker. Now that's a big game.
listen, I mean, cost of admission to Shotgun was apparently pretty high. I mean, geez.
All the security cameras.
You're always protected there. Obviously, those three games at Golden State, at Phoenix, at Denver. I don't think Durant will be back for that game at Phoenix, but nonetheless, it's a high-profile opportunity, Saturday mm-hmm. night game. So, Bontemps, I know you're going to be on part of this trip. The Sixers, as we stand at the moment, I think Boston might play tonight. But Boston has a one-game lead on them. They are tied in the loss column. So, essentially, they're tied.
Neither team plays today, and they're tied in the loss column.
Okay. So, the Sixers have two fewer wins, so technically they're behind. But, you know, the loss column is what is controllable. You can't get rid of losses. You can add more wins. The Celtics are still on the West Coast. They play at the Blazers on Friday and a back-to-back in Utah. That's historically vicious. Back-to-back in Utah coming off the West Coast, historically vicious. Then they go play the Beamlighters before they finish this trip.
I don't know how motivated the Jazz are to win at this point, but go
fair
on.
Fair point, but still a second night of a back-to-back. Yeah. Saturday night, the Jazz for decades have feasted on Eastern Conference teams on Saturday mm-hmm. nights coming off the West Coast on back-to-backs. My point is that the Celtics aren't exactly being impressive recently. They completely blew a game to the Cavs last week, lost to the Rockets in not impressive fashion. They squeezed past the Timberwolves Wednesday night with a controversial end. It was a win, and it should be recognized any road win is a win, but it was not an impressive performance. So, Bontemps, these are the teams you're around all the time. This is a race that is interesting. And obviously, potential second round series and home court on the line. Where are you at with these two teams right now?
Yeah, I mean, to start with the Celtics, I mean, since the All-Star break, they're 6-5 after that win on Wednesday. They're 13th in offense. They're 14th in defense. They're an average team, and they've been playing like an average team. And, you know, they've really, even if you go back to early December when they got off to that incredible start and then went to Phoenix for, you know, that game against the Suns when they got when things started to start going the other way. I mean, since then, they have been 17th in offense since then, and they're third in defense even after this dip. But still, like, they've been an average offensive team now for the better part of 3 months. They haven't been, they haven't been the same team they were the first couple months of the year when they were hitting a ton of shots. Mm-hmm. And the way they play and the way Joe Mazzulla wants them to play, you talked about D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley being high variance players. The Celtics are a high variance team. They're trying to take as many threes as possible every game. When their threes go in, they look amazing. And when their threes don't go in, there's not a lot of a plan B. And you could attribute some of this to injuries. Robert Williams has been out. He's a critical piece for them. Marcus Smart has been dealing with nagging ankle issues all year. Jaylen Brown has missed time. I mean, Al Horford's sitting half a back-to-backs. There's all sorts of stuff you can say, but if you look over a pretty decent stretch of time now, Philadelphia's just playing better than them, and Milwaukee's playing vastly better than them. And you talk about the Lakers losing positioning. To me, the way the Celtics have played these past few weeks, they've allowed the Bucks to storm past them. Bucks are all but certain to be the one seed now. And I just think they're the overwhelming favorites to win the East and the title, because that to me was Boston's chance, was to have the one seed, mm-hmm. have home court again, and, you know, have that extra level of security going into that series against Milwaukee. They don't have that, and the Bucks are healthy. I just don't see how you can look at how the Celtics have played the past 3 months and say this team is going to be good enough to go into Milwaukee and win that series.
Yeah, Marcus Smart just hasn't really been the same since he left with that injury. He was gone for how long? Maybe two, three weeks there. He hasn't looked the same. And really the guy who's been most steady has been Derek White. Maybe Derek White has, I mean, he's been pretty good.
Derek White's been awesome for them.
He's kind of the only guy who's gotten better as the season's gone along. I mean, Tatum and Brown have played well, but they haven't been as consistent as they were early in the season. And look, I mean, this was a team that was in first place from October through February, and they were they only got caught because Milwaukee basically has barely lost for 2 months. It's not that they're like wheezing. It's just that their competition, Milwaukee and Philly, are playing so well that the standard that you have to keep up to, you know, remain impressive is very, very high. And they've had a tougher part of their schedule here as they're playing a bunch of road games, as is Philly right now. But Philly's winning these road games. They went 4-1.
Had the toughest schedule in the league after the All-Star break, and they've been rolling along.
That's right.
Winning games, beating just about everybody that's come in front of them.
The Celtics have also done some wheezing. Like when you blow a 28-point lead to the Brooklyn Nets, that's wheezing. You know, they've had, you know, a few little three-game losing streak, a couple little three-game losing streaks over the last couple months. Like they've been doing some wheezing. They haven't looked like for the first half of the season, they look like the best team in the NBA, and they have not played near that level.
Well, and the other thing, too, that's interesting about them is over the past two seasons now, Jason Tatum's a 35% three-point shooter on 9 attempts a game. Like, I know he was in the three-point contest. People look at him as a great shooter. Like, he's over a pretty long period of time at this point. That's slightly below average where the league is at now.
Yeah.
And that's on 9 attempts a game. He's shooting 34%, you know, 34.3% this year. Or 34.7% this year, and over 9 attempts a game. Jaylen Brown's taking 7. He's taking 33. He's shooting 33.8% on threes. So those two guys are taking 17 threes a game, making 34% of them. That's below average. You know, that sort of goes to what I'm talking about with the team as a whole. Like, they're just, their offense is really predicated on shooting threes. And if they're not hitting threes, they don't have a lot of plan Bs. It's kind of like Phoenix. They don't get to the line a lot. They don't, you know, they have to move the ball and score and hit open shots. And if they're not hitting open shots, Joe will kind of sit there and say, well, we got wide open shots, which, I mean, they do get wide open shots, but if they're not going in, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Monty Williams went on a sort of a rant for him after Phoenix lost at home to the Bucks the other night, complaining about their lack of free throw shooting versus Giannis. I mean, if Giannis is your control group, everybody's going to look at
him. Right.
Because the only thing you can do on Giannis is foul him. It's the only smart play. So he's going to get a lot of free throws. But one of the things that the Suns are pointing to is that Mikal Bridges' free throw rate has like doubled basically since he's gone to Brooklyn.
Yeah, because they allow him to do things with the ball and like
fix. Exactly. Like, oh, geez. No doubt. He's the focal point of the offense and he's attacking the basket on a regular basis instead of standing in the corner.
And by the way,
what a weird development there.
And by the way, just to point out some numbers in free throw attempt rate for the season, Milwaukee 21st actually is a team, which is interesting given how often Giannis goes to the line. Boston 25th, Brooklyn, who obviously had Kevin Durant for most of the season, 27th, Phoenix, 28th. So these are teams that do not get to, you know, in particular, Boston and Phoenix. These are teams that just don't get to the foul line. They don't have players that are putting pressure on the rim and on the paint.
Yeah, they've got great mid-range shooters, but you don't get fouled a lot on mid-range jump shots. And then, you know, the biggest, I think, legitimate criticism of Ayton, other than you can talk about motor stuff, is that, like, you know, he's a finesse player around the basket despite being a chiseled 7-footer.
He's like, a guy he's a guy that you would think could get to the line just looking at him in ways like Joel and Giannis and some of these other guys do, and he just doesn't.
Yeah, he doesn't try to bully guys. He'll spin into a jump. He's got great touch, but it's like there's times where it's like, dude, rip the damn rim off and, you know, get fouled in the process.
By the way, DeAndre Ayton shooting 3 foul shots a game. Mikal Bridges in Phoenix was shooting 3.1.
There you go. The first game that Durant played with them was in Charlotte. They didn't shoot a free throw until the third quarter. And then that game in Dallas that McMahon and I were at a few days later, I think they shot 2 free throws in the first like 15 minutes. Maybe they had 3. So that's who they are.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Winning is an everyday mindset. And on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. and you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Okay, so Ja Morant, suspended by the league. Now, technically, the suspension was for 8 games. I had a guy in the league tell me today, it's a 2-game suspension. And I'm like, well, no, he didn't play. The guy in the league today was like, he got one more game than Trey Lyles. And I was like, okay, that's not true. But he's like, look, if you are injured, don't get, your suspension doesn't count until you're able to play again. And I'm like, okay.
They took his game checks from the games that he was going to miss anyways, and then tacked 2 games onto it. And then, you know, he probably is going to miss one more game. Hopefully I'm saying that because I don't want to spend all of next week in Memphis.
Yeah. Taylor As Jenkins
ramping
implied,
up to return. Yeah.
Taylor Jenkins implied he was not going to, he can return to the team on Monday. Taylor Jenkins implied he was not going to play that night.
Having said all that, this was, and obviously the implication here is once again, Adam Silver, who I will reiterate has got tremendous CEO potential, is soft on crime or, you know, soft on discipline.
Yes.
You know, that's the implication. I will say this. I don't know that I've seen a harsher statement coming from Adam Silver's desk than the one that he issued here. Starting like, let the whole thing, was it a real gun? All that crap. It says holding a firearm in an intoxicated state. So this whole thing, we can't prove he's drunk. No, he was drunk with a gun on Instagram Live. They established those facts right off the top. And then, like, for Adam Silver, the quote, Ja's conduct was irresponsible, reckless, and potentially very dangerous. It also has serious consequences given his enormous following and influence, particularly among young fans who look up to him, blah, 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 sincere contrition, whatever. Learn from the incident. But he does say he understands his obligations and responsibilities to the Memphis Grizzlies and the broader NBA community extend well beyond his play on the court. For Adam Silver, that's a pretty strong statement. So I thought the statement was pretty firm. Both the quote and the establishing the facts here. You know, I hear what you're saying. It's basically 2 extra games. And I do think that Ja realizes what he has put at risk, which is a step in the right direction. Having watched the interview that he did, and I don't want to delve too far into that, I didn't get the sense that there's going, like, that he thinks major changes are necessary, which I would.
He said he feels great.
Yeah. Well, some time in the Florida sun, you know, I think we'd all feel refreshed.
Especially in the spring.
Yeah.
My viewpoint on this was the league saying it was strike two. That's what I took this away. Strike one was that investigation with the Pacers where they suspended his friend. They couldn't prove anything there, but obviously they didn't like.
No, they could. They, hold on. They could prove that there was. First of all, the first thing was for everybody to see. His friend Devontae Pack walked onto the court like he was going to fight the freaking Pacers in the middle of the game. Okay. That's a fact. And it's insanely unacceptable. And then they could definitely prove that that Ja's buddies waited for the Pacers near the team bus and there was a confrontation. They could prove there was a red laser pointed out of the SUV that Ja was riding in. They just couldn't prove that it was from a gun. So this, you know, Ja's thing, like, you know, they investigated that and found that nothing happened. What the hell are you talking about? There's a whole lot of things that happened there that are just ridiculously stupid.
Right. But it goes to the bigger, you know, I don't want to delve too far into that exact situation, but the fact that his friends felt comfortable enough in the environment in Memphis to basically do whatever they wanted to do is also an indication of the direction here. So I kind of feel like that was strike one. Mm-hmm. They let him get away with that, with a slap on the wrist, being his friend suspended, which he complained about.
Yes.
Vociferously. This is strike two. So now you have gone into a new zone here and you're given a moderate suspension, mm-hmm. and you know, it's going to cost him seven figures. And, you know,
and honestly, it could cost him about $40 million. It could cost him an all NBA spot and a supermax escalator.
That is absolutely true. It's hard to frame that. I think it would be hard for him to see him getting all NBA at this point, not just because of the suspension, but because basically not because of like as a result of the suspension, but because the competition for the guard spots is so high.
Right.
And the voters are already looking to kind of break ties, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what you think about it, if you're not available to your team for a self-inflicted situation like this, it affects your candidacy. That's just the only way you can say it.
Right. He suspended the Aaron Fox's hitting game winners. Like, I'm sorry, but exactly. You know.
Yeah. So that I sort of said think it's strike two. And not only that, but you can see from the part of the release from Adam Silver that you just read that it's not just about his value to the Grizzlies. It's about how important he is to the NBA and the NBA's yeah. partners. And frankly, on a personal level, his own partners, Nike, Powerade, mm-hmm. you know, he's got some other endorsement deals. So really the question is going to be now, what are his actions going forward? And if there is a strike three, I suspect that the reaction will be much more significant than this. He and the Grizzlies have had a turbulent couple of weeks, but they can get past it. The penalty yeah. on them will not be lasting. So it's still not superficial, but it's not significant. So now we'll see what happens from here.
Well, and like we talk about on the pod, right, a lot, right? I mean, the motto on the pod is actions over words. And I thought the most interesting thing was the lead quote that Josh said in that interview is the lead quote in McMahon's newser, which was, honestly, I feel like we put ourselves in that situation, meaning the people around him, with our past mistakes. Now it's only right that we focus in and lock in on being smarter and more responsible, holding each other accountable for everything. I feel like in the past, we didn't know what was at stake. And now finally, me having that time to realize everything, have the time alone, I realize that now. I realize what I have to lose, and for us as a group, what we have to lose. It's pretty much just being more responsible, more smarter, and staying away from all the bad decisions. If those words are followed with actions that match those words, there won't be any issues. It's very simple. And if it isn't, there will be. So let's see what happens.
I mean, he talks about past mistakes, and then you ask him incident by incident, and you know, I can't wait till I can tell the truth, but it's all lies. You know, like he said, all these things people are lying about. I can't speak on it, stuff sealed, but you know, I wish I could tell the truth. It's like,
well, again, let's
the actions see what happens more impressive forward than the words. I'll say that, or more significant. And honestly, like, hey, Grizzlies, you did a whole lot of la 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 la, and you know, the oh well, we talked to him. Man, you were treading really lightly on these concerns for a while, okay? And so, are you going to really hold this guy accountable, or you know, or are you going to, you know, just coddle? Because there's been a lot of coddling. So we'll see.
I'm a little bit worried that this whole thing is all just one giant layer of public relations, because
you think
the video was so bad that it required a maneuver from Ja. It required a maneuver from the Grizzlies. It required a maneuver from the NBA. And, you know, the story coming out that Ja was in counseling, and then he's asked about it, and he says he was getting recce and anxiety breathing techniques. you know, I wasn't there, so I don't know, but that hit a little funny.
I tell you what, I'm going to look into this recce stuff.
Well, anyway, let's see what happens. I think it was
strike. Did you know what it was before yesterday?
I had heard of it before, but I did have to look it up. I didn't know what it was. But
the other thing I will say, treatment will keep you out of the keep you from handling firearms in a strip club at 3 something in the morning.
I'm not going to, it's not my end of the business. I will say that I know that the story about him getting counseling came out like 2 days before this, but I'm not sure. I think some people were assuming, oh, he only had
been there. He says he woke up that morning and initiated that. I'm not certain that he's the one who initiated that, but he had been there. We just weren't able to get it to, you know, that's one of those you can't be 99.9% sure. You have to have 100% confirmation before
you and Woj had that story. I think, was it on Monday?
Monday when the Grizzlies were in Dallas. But yeah, he'd been there for, you know, whatever it was over a week by then.
Yeah. So I have noticed people reacting like, oh, we had a day and a half of counseling and now he's, you know, ready to come back. That I don't think that's accurate either. I think he deserves more credit than that. So, all right. Well, off to Albany on Sunday night when we do the pod, McMahon, will I be doing it from Bontemps' apartment in New York or will I be doing it from this seat with Kent out?
I figured you'd be doing it from some penthouse suite with the way that you roll. What, the Ritz doesn't have a room for you? What's going on?
Listen, the Bontemps' guest suite has been prepared, I am told.
Really? He just had the plumber come, so that's a good sign.
That's true. That's part of why the plumber was here.
We could go a lot of different ways with that, but we won't. even that could be self-deprecating on me. All right. Thank you, Jackson. Thank you to our new official public relations public PA address man.
And it's not PR, it's PA.
Not PR. We don't do PR on this podcast. Thank you to Bontemps and McMahon. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.